As we hid the motorcycle in the back of the hotel, Rama talked more about Jesus the Christ, but always in an unusual way. When she referred to him, she made it sound as if she knew him personally, continually calling him a friend, a dude, a cool individual, a freak. This was the first time I'd heard someone I like say good things about Jesus, without calling him our Lord Jesus Christ. Strangely enough, there was nothing disrespectful nor arrogant about her way of expressing her feelings about him. She said she was sorry she couldn't talk to me about Jesus because she could feel that my belligerent attitude got to the best of me whenever the subject came up. I liked the way Rama talked about him, in language that enabled me to grasp the idea rather than the words, and in a way that didn't get my adrenaline rushing. Rama went down toward the river and I went into the restaurant. Chapter 6. Ananias and Ananias. I left the restaurant after having something to eat and walked slowly to my car to get a blanket. My head was spinning. I needed time to think, to sort out things in my mind. I wandered down to the river, where I found Rama sleeping peacefully on a patch of green grass near the water's edge. I put my blanket down and sat next to her. She looked exactly like any other earthling born in Levittown or any other city, I thought, contemplating my beautiful sleeping friend. I'd always imagined an extraterrestrial would look different, perhaps green with one eye and antennae, wearing a space suit with a helmet. Certainly not someone walking around with jeans, hiking boots and a scarf on her head. The circumstances in no way matched the mood and the feelings I'd have anticipated on meeting an extra-terrestrial. I thought someone from outer space would arrive in a large city in front of crowds of thousands and emerge from a flying saucer or some other kind of incredible flying vehicle. Definitely not on an LAPD patrol motorcycle in a remote place in South America. I guess the image I had was of some kind of invasion that would cause destruction and interplanetary wars. Who could have guessed that an alien being would be talking about Moses, Ezekiel, Jesus Christ and the Bible? Rama looked sweet and gentle as she slept, it was so nice being around her. But I knew she wasn't kidding when she'd said, "Take it or leave it." She had said it emphatically enough for me to get the point. As soon as she opened her eyes, I was supposed to have made up my mind. Rama was being very understanding about my feel-softenings of incredulity and disbelief. She even said she didn't care whether or not I believe her as long as my attitude didn't distract from the concepts she was trying to convey to me. I wanted to believe her, but living in various cities in the world, I'd learned to be paranoid, to not trust people. Everyone seemed to be out to get you. From the muggers on the streets to the Internal Revenue and the rotten establishment. I wasn't born that way, I was conditioned to it. There were also other considerations. I thought about my finances. What she was suggesting I do could jeopardize my lifestyle. I kept an expensive apartment in Beverly Hills and drove a fancy sports car. I liked my salary and the things I could do with it. I had always liked to be a free spirit, to do what I wanted whenever I felt like doing it. That's why I had no binding commitments, not to a particular person, comsoft-panny or a family. On the other hand, I knew that it was also because of the nature of freelance work that I had made a decision not to marry. Any sudden or drastic changes in my life therefore wouldn't hurt anyone else. After a while, I lay down close to Rama and fell asleep. About an hour later, I was awakened by her touch as she lightly stroked my forehead with the palm of her hand. I stretched and shifted my body towards her lovely face above me. She called me Sleepy Face. We got up and walked to a nearby spring to drink sulfuric water. There we found another comfortable patch of green and sat down. "Rama," I said after a long silence, "I've decided I want to stay. I'll do whatever I can to help you write that message of yours. I'll introduce you to some writers and people in the publishing business." She shook her head. "No, Chaco. I'll give you all the help you need, but I want you to do this by yourself." The last of my resistance dissolved. "All right," I said, "but be a little more specific. What will we be doing? How long will it take? When do you want me to be here? I have to make some plans, you know, And as it stands now, I have a commitment to be in Los Angeles by July 15th. Good questions. When you're serious like this, you're even more charming and handsome. It's not necessary for you to come here that often. I don't want to interfere with your plans and present contracts. But, sorry, I don't see you being in Los Angeles by July 15th. What do you mean by that? You won't be leaving by July 15th. If I'm not back by that date, I'll be violating a judicial order. What makes you say I'm not going? Something important concerning your work is going to come up, some complications you will have to resolve. On July 18th, or thereabouts, your South American supervisor is coming to Lima to straighten out a certain mess. He's only supposed to come if things get really bad. I spoke to him yesterday and told him to kill the deal. He said he couldn't come, he's much too busy. Charles, I'm not making this happen. Don't be upset. Just hang in there, and let's leave it at that. But I repeat, you will be spending more than just a few weeks in Peru. You'll have time to yourself. And we can always use it. Go places. Have a good time. Do things that are relaxing. Your learning will be gradual, and you'll be taking many notes. The more you receive, the more your mind and memory will develop. That's why I want you to be conscious and aware. We don't want to give the impression to your future readers that you came here drunk or high, and, therefore, that you imagined or made up this whole thing. We'll work when and where we want. If you keep your mind receptive, we'll be productive. The most important thing is for you to be relaxed and comfortable. But if you want to drink, smoke, snort or drop something, don't do it when we're scheduled for a session. I'm free to go any time, say, if the going gets rough or I find it's detrimental to my health. I'll be able to take care of my business transactions and come back when soft-ever I want to. Of course. The choice is yours. You're a free-willed individual. You will only come here when you want to come, and because being here makes you happy. It's to our advantage that you be at peace with yourself and others. With inner peace, you'll get a lot more out of our work together. Okay, I'm ready now. What next? You'll be learning some simple things first. Scientific phenomena that, up to now, many people on your planet still refuse to believe. Such as? Certain kinds of unexplained experiences that have been ignored because they were considered old wives' tales, or taboo. Supernatural things, like the soul, ghosts, spirit. Things you've read about in horror comic books related to death, contact with the world beyond, mediumship, fortune tellers, witchcraft, voodoo, really soft-just cults, exorcism, Satanism. I could go on and on. All these phenomena function in relationship to natural law. These are things are also related to science because they can be observed and studied using the principles and methods of science. Nothing new. These subjects have always been quite popular in your world. The stuff has even become quite commercial. Don't be surprised if one day you pick up a paper and read an ad in the classified section saying, "Dial a ghost service," or if someone hands you a business card for Black Cat & Co., Incorporated, bad luck guaranteed or your money back. I laughed, amused by her analogy on the commercial soft-ism of it. All the phenomena I just mentioned are related to a certain cosmic force we could call spirit, she said. We're going to study the spirit in detail. Don't look so surprised. Once you understand it, how it works, its components, your learning is going to become easier. I began taking notes. When I said you will be able to live forever, I meant it, she continued. By seeing and knowing your own spirit, you'll be getting closer to living forever. Remember Jesus Christ promised eternal life as the ultimate reward. That's what I was taught in Catholic school. But we're going to be more academic and open-minded about it. That's more my style. Yes, I know. What we're dealing with is simple science and logic. I'm listening. On this planet Earth, modern science still refuses to recognize the existence of the spirit. To understand anything about nature is to recognize the working of an intelligent force in the universe. But in this world of yours, science doesn't go beyond the atom. So let's start with it. In a very elementary way, Let's revise your understanding of the atom. She took my pad and drew the whole atomic concept with its parts. This is a proton, she said, drawing a plus sign, and an electromagnetic charge is found in the nucleus of the atom. Now this negative sign, we call an electron. You know from your science classes in college that negative and positive attract each other and equal signs repel each other. Both of these signs carry a charge of equally balanced energy. And when they unite, they form a simple atom. The electrons rotate constantly around the proton at great speeds, I interjected, the same way the Earth and other planets orbit around the Sun. You're right. An atom is a planetary system in miniature. And the distance that exists between its soft hyphantrons and protons is relatively the same in proportion to its own environment as in a planetary system. Do you know the name of the cohesive force that moves and organizes the atomic complex or a planetary system? No, I don't know any names for it. Let's call that moving, organizing energy the force. Now, I want you to visualize it. It's important to make mental pictures of these concepts. Let your mind go for a moment. Imagine we're inside an atom, standing on the surface of a proton. In Disneyland, there's a gadget that demonstrates this principle. A reducing machine allowing you to travel inside a snowflake. You sit strapped into a chair inside a tram that takes you into a cave. Special effects lead you to believe you're getting smaller and smaller until you can see the intimacy of the atom. Then gradually you return to normal size. Then you see somebody's eye looking at you through a microscope. Yeah, I've been on that ride. Disneyland has it now, but a chemical company, Monsanto, originally developed that idea and introduced it at the New York World's Fair in 1964. It really gets the concept across effectively. Here, from our proton, she said, reminding me that we were in a similar space, we can see the electrons orbiting us. Within the distance between us and our electrons, there is an atmosphere. It's what we're calling the force. This energy organizes matter from the very beginning of each world. It creates the first energy, positive, protons, and the second energy, negative, electrons. It organizes these two energies. When all three forces work together, they create and organize matter. That force is the thinking element of nature. When scientists on your planet finally recognize the existence of this force, they 11 give it a name. But what science believes or doesn't believe isn't what concerns us. We're concerned with the function of this force and the role it plays in the universe. Once you see it and sense it, you won't care whether anyone believes you or not. Something funny happens. You're only too happy to enjoy it selfishly. Can you draw a picture of this third force, too? It's a combination of two elements, two energies. Let's call one ananas, the other ananites. I got those names from a book published in Spanish here in your world. Someone we respect very much wrote it, a Mexican author, Rodolfo Benavides. The name of the book is En la noche de los tiempos, which means in the night of time. I've never heard of it. That doesn't surprise me. These elements are still unknown to most scientists in your world. However, the names used in this book are the same given to these elements in other parts of this solar system, the Sun, Neptune, Mars, Venus and many other places where they are known and referred to in universal language. Are you saying there's intelligent life on the Sun? Yes, sir, you're joking. No, I'm not, but let's not get off the subject, we'll discuss that later. This third element of the atom, found in the space between the protons and electrons of the atom, is intelligent energy. Now, look, she said, drawing a few circumferences on my pad, it'll be easier if you make an imaginary comparison of the atom to our planetary system. The P will be the Sun and the E a planet. Some scientists already suspect this force exists. They refer to it as the cohesive element of the atom which fills the entire atomic space. This force is the atmosphere organizing the elements of the atom. If science knows or suspects this third energy of the atom, terminology isn't important. What doesn't science know? Its physical constitution, the way the ananas and ananites are arranged in the universe to function as a cohesive force. The intelligence within it. These little characters you call anons and anants soft-ites, their particles much smaller than the electron and proton and are so micro-minute that in my horrible world nobody understands them? Yes, but they're not, I repeat, not particles of matter. They're units of energy. They have no molecular bodies. Here, let me draw them for you. She started drawing a series of plus and minus signs in several rows. Plus 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 soft hyphen plus 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 soft hyphen. Then, with great enthusiasm and conviction, she said, "This is your soul, your spirit, what you are, what I am, what we all are. Our human bodies are made of atoms, our spirit is made of anunas and aninites." I stared at the markings on my pad. "So, this is the human spirit?" "Yes. Spirit is energy, a vibration is energy. This really shocks me. It differs so much from what I've been taught and believed all my life. This shatters my whole outlook on modern scientific concepts. Just wait until an intelligent, open-minded, material soft-hyphenistic scientist proves that this is actually a physical force, organized physically, with physical qualities and Charak soft-hyphen-teristics." She pointed to the block of positive and negative signs on my pad. "This is how anunas and aninites are found, alter soft-hyphenated. These are the elements that fill everything in the universe, from the micro-smallest to the super-gigantic. This is the beginning and the end. The Alpha, the Omega, the natural intelligence that organizes life. God, if you want to get serious. For me, this is the eternal God of creation." She paused. We stared at each other for a few moments. Then she drew another sketch on the paper. "This is the way anunas and aninites function within the interatomic spaces," she said. "What's the origin of this energy? What starts it? Where's God?" I asked. She took my pad and drew two lines, a vertical and a horizontal one, covering the whole page. "A big plus sign." She pointed to the center of the two lines. "Here. This is the magnetic vibratory center of the universe, the eternal thought of creation, eternal life. The main shaft, motive, and cause of everything in existence in the whole wide universe. Anunas and aninites are the manifestation of that vibratory center. Positive and negative. Eternal life uses these two elements as an instrument to generate and create atoms, then all life. You remember being told that God is everywhere at all times, that you are made in the image of God, and that God is the creator of all things in the universe?" I just sat there dumbfounded, shaking my head. Her reasoning was somewhat deep, yet I understood the concept rather well. The whole thing was hard to fight, but then again, who did Rama think she was to draw some glyphs, and so matter-of-factly call them God? It took me years in high school and college to figure out the composition of the atom. Now everything I'd learned in the past 30 years seemed useless. In my thoughts I saw Rama going into a church on some far away planet where they sang hymns and prayed to some positive and negative signs plastered on the walls. My silence was interrupted by Rama's sudden outburst of laughter. She had been reading my mind again. "You really have an interesting sense of humor," she said. "It's tough to examine the concept of God and creation in this world of yours. The problem lies mainly in the efforts made by humans, lock, stock and barrel, to picture God as some supreme being with a physical body and human form. When physicists in your world get to know and understand this field of science, when they're thought soft-awfully convinced that the soul of the human body is a part of God, made solely and exclusively of these two elements, this binary code of anunas and aninites, then they'll have to define God as a great positive energy, an intelligent force pervading the entire universe. The total sum of anunas in the universe is God. The total sum of aninites is the creation." Again I was silent. I tried to be careful what I was thinking, knowing she would hear my thinking as well as what I said aloud. Finally, after a few moments, I asked, "What's the difference between the way the third force is found in the universe and the way it's found in individual spirits of human beings?" "The third force starts by creating atoms. Obeying natural physical and chemical laws, the atoms construct the molecule. Molecules, again obeying these same laws, make the cells, also obeying biological and physio-soft-logical laws, make other cells. Multi-conglomerations of cells create the life forms of humans, animals and even the lowest forms of intelligence. To understand it in your time element, this process takes ages, unlimited centuries, of development. A bunch of anoners and anionites consolidate and work together for a main goal, a common cause to create life, for instance. Assume they decide to organize the body and soul of Joe Blow. He's born, lives his life, and eventually dies. The molecules that were his physisoft-cal body transformed to ashes. But the anoners and anionites that were his spirit do not die. They're transformed. They can self-recognize, associate and consolidate again, even if the work takes them centuries. A number of anoners and anionites come together out of the whole to make an individual vibration. Someone's spirit is another intelligent life in the spiritual form. You're saying that when these tiny fellows want biological life, they coordinate, work together, create atoms, molecules, cells and biological life. You've got it. Remember the phrase, energy cannot be created nor destroyed, just transformed? For those who still believe the cell is the beginning of life, here's a challenge to revise their thinking. Your human spirit is what makes your physiological body tick. The Bible describes this element as that in which we live and move and have our being. Every religion talks about holy ghosts, holy spirits, and divinities. To simplify it, they tell you God gave Adam a divine touch, the breath of life, the divine spark placed in the heart. You asked me what the spirit was. It is an accumulation of positive energy originated and generated by the eternal creator. God, if you prefer, for terminology's sake. Each spirit has its own free will, given by God. It individualizes itself in order to incarnate for one biology-soft-girl life period. This varies according to how time is measured in each world and the life expectancy at any given part in the universe. Once these anoners and anionites have again united and individualized into one being, they melt with the atomic matter of their previous incarnations. The indie-soft-vigil unit gets better and stronger because it keeps adding more third force and more atoms, using the vibratory pattern still existing and remembered from the ancient records and experiences of its past lives. We're talking about a process known as karma, reincarnation, resurrection of the flesh, the you must be born again idea. I interrupted her. What about death in relation to the atom and this third force? I'm interested in hearing your opinions. These are not my opinions, she said. I haven't invented all this. Just like you, I had to learn these things at one time in one of my lives. I'm talking about cosmic laws that have been known throughout the galaxies for millions and millions of your terrestrial years. Rama, I'm sorry, I said. Please don't lose your patience with me. All right, she said, we're talking about common death, as it's known on Earth. When your heart, lungs, brain and everything else, cease to function. To understand death a little better, let's make an analogy. Take a factory where 200 people work. Out of the 200, 10 are responsible for running the operation smoothly. One fine day these 10 individuals decide to quit all at the same time. Then you have chaos, confusion, anarchy, a mess. Now, compare this factory with the body of Joe Blow. The 200 workers are his heart, brains, anoners, blood, bones, veins, arteries, anionites, nervous system. The anoners and anionites are the ones running the show. One day they decide they no longer want to work for Joe Blow, and they split. Now the heart, brains, blood, bones, arteries, lungs and nervous system don't have the intelligent direction to organize and synchronize them properly, because the anoners and anionites are on strike. What happens? The blood flow can't coordinate with the heart, which in turn can't work with the brain, because there isn't enough oxygen coming in from the lungs. In short, you've got chaos, anarchy, confusion. Another mess. That's physiological death. You're saying that the spirit is what makes our bodies function? It's so simple. That's fantastic. I'm glad you like it. Now that you know and understand that your spirit is the third force, you can control it. You can take your Anunnas and Anunnites out of your body and transport them to any place. Nothing I'm telling you is unknown nor new to your planet. It's called astral projection. Remember when I mentioned Medisoft-ums, spiritualists, exorcism? These powers derive from the control of this force. There are religions that base their entire teachings on taking the spirit out of the body. Lobsang Rampa and the Tibetan Lamas practice it. They're saying the same thing, that you can take your Anunnas and Anunnites away from your physical body for an outing. I've heard of this. If I remember correctly, Rampa goes to places where his physical body has never been. Right. His Anunnas and Anunnites, in the form of spirit, are the ones doing the traveling. This morning you and I communicated with each other mentally, using the third force as a common vehicle to establish it. I was receiving your thoughts as you wanted them to get to me. But you were so insecure, you wanted to use semantics. Yes, it was weird. I'm almost afraid to ask about it. I was in tune with you spiritually. Our Anunnas and Anunnites consolidated into one mass of spirit. What happens to the physical body while the spirit is out having a good time? The body stays put wherever you leave it, in a coma soft-like state. You're completely out. The organs of your body keep on working, not as accurately as when you are fully conscious, but with the proper training, there's nothing to fear. Lobsang Rampa uses a term for the connection between the body and the spirit. He calls it the silver cord. That's the link. The liaison between body and spirit. Here, we have to use an analogy again. You're working at your 10th floor office and you have to go to the mailroom in the basement, then from there to the executive suite on the 14th floor. You ask your secretary to give you the paging beeper to keep in contact with your desk by an electrical radio frequency. Let's say your spirit wants to go for an outing tonight. Anunnas and Anunnites decide to go and play some golf. A while. They set up the silver cord to keep in touch with the body. Then away they go. Your lungs, brain and heart keep working on automatic pilot, but are still in close contact with the spirit by a micro frequency, very elastic and mighty strong. As she spoke, I remembered coming across several books on this subject, The Third Eye, The Silver Cord, and You Forever. I'd read them and there were bits and pieces etched deeply in my memory. Also my friend Gracie, who studied metaphysics, had told me about going out of your body and taking fantastic trips, but at that time all this stuff was too far out for me. As I sat, somber and deep in thought, Rama put her arm on my shoulder and pointed to the positive signs on my pad. "These signs make your soul," she said. "They're constantly revitalizing your physical body. This is your thinking process, too. It can be projected to any point in the universe, depending on how you stretch it. Your thought is your soul. You transport thoughts, you're transporting Anunnas. The shape of a thought is a conglomeration of Anunnas. I don't understand you on that. Close your eyes, mentally transport yourself some soft-where." I followed her instructions to the corner of Broadway and 42nd Street in New York City. Then she said, "I can see you're creating shapes. You see the high buildings, low-use theater, the Castro convertibles sign, the Times Square building, the N-soft-trance to a subway station. Now your thoughts have movement. I can see cars moving, a fire engine going down 7th Avenue. Rama, you're fantastic. How'd you do that? Don't be impatient, my friend, you'll be able to do it, too. Want to do another one?" "Yes. This is fun. You go. I'll tell you." I mentally transported myself to Rådhuspladsen in Copenhagen, Denmark, and imagined going on a tram from Rådhuspladsen toward Victoria's Gate. I had a mental image of going past the entrance of Tivoli Gardens, the great SAS building at the corner, the then permanent department store. She began talking at that point. "You are moving at about 40 miles an hour down the main road of Copenhagen, Denmark. Do a good. Mange she said, which is thank you, in Danish. "Rama, how many terrestrial languages do you speak?" I asked, surprised at her command of yet another language. 27. and about 115 dialects. I was impressed, and becoming more and more interested in this third force and all the powers that apparently were connected to it. What about the negative signs, the Anunnites, can they be projected too?